The one really nice thing about living in Minnesota with the cold weather is that certain diseases don't thrive here at all. Although if somebody goes somewhere, they may be able to bring back certain diseases and suffer with them, but they don't survive outside all that long. And one of those diseases is leprosy. Leprosy is still found in certain parts of the world, in tropical parts, where sanitation might be a little less than ideal, let's just say, where poverty is at root. It's currently known as Hansen's disease. Leprosy itself is caused by a bacteria that lives on the skin that eventually causes the nerves to kind of die, the blood flow to shrivel up, and the skin and the flesh underneath rot. So not only is it an ugly disease, but it is a disease that has a certain stench about it. It's not uncommon, was not uncommon for people who had leprosy to have parts of the nose, parts of the ears, certain soft tissues gone, rotted off. And because of that connection with decay, in the Jewish world where touching a corpse would make one ritually impure, to be a walking corpse, anyone who would touch a walking corpse or anyone associated with leprosy would be considered unclean, impure, unable to offer sacrifice until that impurity had been wiped away. And for the leper, it would only be wiped away when there was a cure. In the days before antibiotics, the cures were few and far between, usually caused by better hygiene. Now, they go to the doctor if they're able, and a $10 course of treatment cures it. But it was a dangerous disease in Jesus' day. And yet, because they had to live alone, the desire for community was common, and that's something that we all have in us as human beings, the desire for community. Those who had leprosy would find themselves in small little groups, and they would band together and eke out an existence. And so what Jesus encounters today in this gospel reading was not uncommon. And what Jesus, or what we hear about in today's first reading was not uncommon. That even the rich and the powerful could get leprosy. We have Naaman, he was the head of the Syrian army, and he has leprosy. He, in the verses right before today's passage picks up, the author of the book of Kings tells us that it was because of him that Israel was kept safe, because of his military might as a Syrian officer. Now, if you're quick, you'll know that Syria is not Jewish. It's Gentile. But in the process of conquering, he took captive a young girl from Judea, a young girl who was Jewish, and realized that he had this terrible disease of leprosy, that he was able to keep hidden and under control, but just couldn't get away. He had tried everything. And this young girl said, if only my master would go to the prophet in Samaria, in Israel, he might find healing. Well, having tried everything else, Naaman decides, I'm going to try that. But because he's a military general, he cannot simply go into enemy territory without letters of diplomatic permissions. And so he asks his king, the Syrian king, for a letter, which the king writes. And he takes it to the king of Judea. And the king opens it up and rips his garments. Who am I, a god that I should be asked to heal? Is this some kind of trap? And Elisha the prophet, the one that the young girl was referring to, hears about this and goes to the king and says, basically that letter was meant for me. Have you no faith in God? Have Naaman come to me. But instead of going out to Naaman when he comes to his house, Elisha sends his servant with a message. He tells Naaman to jump in the river 7 times. It's kind of a crass way of saying go take a short walk off or a long walk off a short pier, right? Naaman is upset. He's angry. Will not even the prophet talk to me? And he's angry, and he's about ready to go, and he's going to jump in the Jordan. Why the Jordan River? There's nothing beautiful about the Jordan River. For those unaware, there's some places where the Jordan River widens out and is beautiful and is wonderful, and the water runs clean. But most of the time, it's kind of dirty, even in the days of Jesus, even in the days of Naaman, because it ran fast. Dirty water. And it wasn't a very big river. In fact, in the few parts that I've been able to see, except up in the north, most of the time, the Jordan River is more like Plum Creek. Not very big, not very beautiful, not very clean, not very impressive. And Naaman says, are not the rivers of Syria so much better? Are not the rivers of Damascus so much cleaner? Jump in the river. And the servant says, well, what do you expect? What do you want? Well, I thought the prophet would come out and he'd wave his hand. It actually says that. Wave his hand over the area and heal it. But instead he tells me, jump in the river 7 times. I'm going back home. And the servant says, but if he would have asked you to do something extraordinary, you would have done it, right? He simply is asking you to take a bath 7 times, plunge 7 times in the Jordan River. What do you lose by doing it? And so Naaman goes and plunges in the river 7 times and comes out the 7th time healed. And he recognizes that he's been healed by a very ordinary act. And so he goes back to Elisha and tries to offer Elisha everything that he brought. Thousands and thousands of golden and silver coins. Beautiful clothing, beautiful cloth, beautiful things. And Elisha says, I will not take it. Mainly because he understands that the healing came from God, not from him. And Naaman needs to understand that. It is God who brought the healing. But Naaman comes to a moment of faith. It seems like an odd request for him to ask for 2 mule loads of dirt, doesn't it? Until you understand that in that time, gods were territorial. That's how Naaman saw the gods. I will worship no other God than the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not realizing that that God was a creator and ruler of all the universe, that everywhere he went, he would find that God. And he could worship that God, but instead, I need to worship on the soil of this God. So let me take back 2 mule loads of dirt so that every time I offer sacrifice, because I will only offer sacrifice, I will only worship that God. Let me take back 2 mule loads of dirt so that I can do so. Something very ordinary, right? Dirt. As a permanent reminder that he had been healed. As just a little aside, that servant was of Elisha that had gone out was a little upset that Elisha had turned down all this money, all this stuff. So he went after Naaman without Elisha knowing. And he comes back with 2 talents. Thousands of dollars worth of coins and a change of clothes for 2 people and kind of hides them. And Elisha says, well, where were you? Nowhere. What did you do? Nothing. You took the money, even though I had turned it down. And because you did this, you will have the disease that Naaman had and spent the rest of his life as a leper. Just goes to show, don't lie to prophets. But the point is all the same. Naaman wouldn't have experienced healing if he wouldn't have let go of his concept of how God was going to heal him. He wouldn't have experienced healing if he would have said, well, because he didn't do what I thought he was supposed to do, this prophet, I'm going home. He wouldn't have experienced healing. Sometimes God gives healing in very ordinary ways, and we need to let go of our concept. That's what Naaman came to understand. And today in our gospel reading, we have these 10 lepers. First of all, they should have known when Jesus told them, go show yourselves to the priest, that something was happening. The only equivalent that I can have, it's like being a typhoid Mary, walking into the downtown district of Chicago and coughing on everyone. They're sick. They're contagious. And yet they're told to go into the very temple area to declare themselves clean when they have a disease. The only time that a leper could be allowed back into the temple area is if there was no sign of the disease whatsoever. But there they are, actively sick. And Jesus sends them all the same. They should have known something was happening. But only the Samaritan understands that Jesus had done something extraordinary by asking them to do something in the ordinary way. That he had healed them before they had even been able to go into the temple area. And he comes back and he worships. That God sometimes works in very ordinary ways. He works in very ordinary ways in our own life too, doesn't he? Sometimes we think that God only acts in these extraordinary ways that, you know, kind of like Naaman, if he'd just wave his hand and say some words and, you know, everything would be okay. I see it every once in a while of somebody who doesn't want to necessarily go to the doctor, I'm just going to pray to God. Well, sometimes God's healing comes through the ordinary means of a doctor or a nurse or a physical therapist. That God can heal even there in these ordinary ways. And sometimes we overlook the ordinary ways of our life. We think that in order to act, we have to have some magnificent revelation. As I say that, I'm reminded that 102 years ago today, Our Lady of Fatima appeared the last time with the miracle of the sun. We think that's how God acts and interacts with us in this world in these magnificent ways. And while it's true that he acts in those magnificent ways, most of the time, he doesn't. Most of the time, it's in rather ordinary ways. If we sit around and are constantly waiting for some magnificent sign, some big sign that is completely, we can't miss at all, we're going to miss every sign, including the big ones. Was that the sign, God? Oh, I don't know. Could be a little bit bigger. Was that the sign, God? Oh, I don't know. It could be bigger. No, instead, God works in ordinary ways. There's a thing called cognitive resonance, as a side. This week, I have to admit, it's been active in my life again. It's when you hear the same thing over and over, and it just resonates and resonates and resonates. One of the things that's been resonating in everywhere I've gone, I've heard it at least 6 times, is what's the next right step, as small as it is. If we're sitting around waiting for God to act and we miss that next right step, we'll miss the second right step, and the third, and the fifth, and the tenth. But if we take the next right step, Naaman turning around and plunging himself into the river, not just once or twice, but 7 times. The Samaritan realizing that he'd been healed and coming back to the source of healing, Jesus Christ. Most of us, and just taking the next right step. Or St. John Paul II said, for those who are married especially, there's nothing more extraordinary than the ordinary love of a husband and wife. Something ordinary, something every day, and yet God is there. Again, if we keep looking for the big, the magnificent, we miss it. But if we look for the ordinary ways that God wants to act in our lives and take the next step in faith, we'll be able to take every next step and find him working, again, in very ordinary ways, but doing extraordinary things.